Today is Tuesday, May 11th, and you're listening to International Edition on The Voice of America. I am Chinua Adofo, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. Coming up, President Biden to meet lawmakers on economic plans.
President Biden is consulting with lawmakers this week to press for the passage of more than $4 trillion of spending in two areas.
Plus, violent clashes escalate between Israel and Palestine.
In Gaza, the health ministry said at least 20 people, including 9 children, were killed in Israeli airstrikes on the Palestinian territory.
Also, at least 11 people killed in Russia school shooting. These stories and more are next. Our top story today is in Russia. At least 11 people have been killed and many more wounded after one or more gunmen opened fire in a school in the Russian city of Kazan. The RIA news agency reported on Tuesday, citing the Emergency Services Ministry. Some Russian news agencies reporting 2 teenage gunmen were involved, and others said a sole shooter took part. RIA said one 19-year-old gunman had been detained and that an explosion had been heard at the school. Footage posted on social media showed a young man being pinned to the ground outside the school building by a police officer. Footage also showed emergency services vehicles parked outside the school with people running towards the building. It was not clear whether any other shooter remained at large, nor was it immediately clear what the motive for the attack was. Air raid sirens and missiles are heard in the skies over Israel as Israeli Defense Forces early Tuesday fired its Iron Dome anti-missile system at rockets fired from Palestine. Militants in Gaza launched rocket barrages into Israel for a second day as Israeli planes fired missiles into the Palestinian territory. Palestinian officials say the death toll in its territory now exceeds 25 people, including 9 children. Israel disputes that toll and said it has killed 15 Hamas fighters. A short time ago, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said Israel will intensify its strikes against Hamas. 2 Israeli women have died and at least 30 people have been injured in the rocket barrages. The most serious fighting between armed militants in the Hamas-controlled Gaza in 2 years began after Palestinian protesters and Israeli police clashed at the Al-Aqsa Mosque. In Jerusalem on Monday. The rising violence has world leaders calling for both sides to step back. Pakistani Prime Minister is condemning Israel for firing into civilian areas during the holy month of Ramadan. Charles de la Desma with the Associated Press has more.
Pakistan's Prime Minister has announced Israel's use of force against Palestinians during the fasting month of Ramadan. Imran Khan says he's asked his foreign minister to contact his Turkish and Saudi counterparts to discuss how to collectively respond. Earlier, Pakistan's foreign minister urged the world community to take notice of Israel's force against innocent Palestinian worshippers. Under discussion is whether Pakistan, Saudi and Turkish officials should convene the Organization of Islamic Cooperation, a group of Islamic countries. Pakistan is one of the few countries that have no diplomatic relations with Israel. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
Turkey has condemned Israel's response to Palestinian protests in Jerusalem, but the outbreak of violence threatens to undermine steps by Ankara to ease tensions with Israel, as Dorian Jones reports from Istanbul.
Mosques around Turkey Monday broadcast prayers in support of Palestinians injured in violent confrontations with Israeli police in Jerusalem. The unrest, which coincides with the Muslim month of Ramadan, comes amid possible eviction of Palestinians from East Jerusalem homes on land claimed by Jewish settlers. Also Monday, hundreds of people, many waving Palestinian flags, massed in front of Israel's consulate in Istanbul in protest of Israeli police actions around the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound in Jerusalem's Old City. The site is known to Jews as the Temple Mount and to Muslims as a noble sanctuary, considered the holiest site in Judaism and the third holiest in Islam. Witnesses reported Israeli security forces fired tear gas, rubber bullets and stun grenades at Palestinian demonstrators, some of whom threw rocks at police. Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan's communications chief, Fahrettin Altun, Monday tweeted, "It's time to stop Israel's heinous and cruel attacks." His comments come 2 days after President Erdogan denounced Israel.
Terör devleti İsrail.
Israel, the cruel terrorist state, attacks the Muslims in Jerusalem, whose only concern is to protect their homes and their sacred values, in a savage manner devoid of ethics, Erdogan said. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said Sunday Israel will continue to maintain freedom of worship for all faiths, but we will not allow violent disturbances. The Israeli leader told a cabinet meeting that he had met with security officials and vowed to enforce law and order decisively and responsibly. Ankara has been looking to repair strained relations with Israel as part of a broader strategy to end its regional isolation. Dorian Jones for VOA News, Istanbul.
In Afghanistan, the Taliban has announced a nationwide ceasefire that will take effect when the 3-day annual Muslim festival of Eid al-Fitr begins Thursday, marking the end of Islamic fasting month of Ramadan. Reporter Ayaz Gaul tells International Edition Steve Miller, "It's welcome news as fears of escalating violence persist as the United States and international forces continue their withdrawal from nearly 20 years of conflict."
That was sort of a surprising announcement because the kind of violence that has been taking place over the last few weeks, it has killed so many people that there were worries that this Afghan violence that was largely being anticipated to go out of control. But this ceasefire has come a big relief for Afghans. But just let me tell you that this is the third ceasefire the Taliban have announced since 2018 and during the same Eid holidays. And the good news was today that Afghan President Ashraf Ghani responded and ordering his national security forces to also cease, halt any offensive operations.
What about after Eid? Because the holiday only lasts a few days.
But we have seen in the past that while the government of President Ghani has been willing to extend the ceasefire, it is the Taliban that has never agreed and ignored international calls for extending this ceasefire beyond the 3-day Eid festivities. And again, the Taliban are using these ceasefires, annual ceasefires, basically to increase their political influence, to convince Afghans that they are the people, they are the group which can provide them security. And by this announcement, you know, Taliban is also has been demonstrating to the players outside Afghanistan, the United States, that it has total control over its fighters, you know, against these suspicions that maybe the Taliban is a loose alliance of different groups and which are acting independently. But over the last two ceasefires that we have witnessed, that once the Taliban instructed their fighters not to launch any offensive, the United Nations has been a witness and has established that over those two Eid ceasefires, not a single incident of violence happened from the Taliban side.
That's reporter Ayaz Gaul speaking with my colleague Steve Miller from Islamabad. The United States welcomed the Taliban's announcement of a 3-day ceasefire over the Eid holiday and urged it to extend the ceasefire as U.S. troops withdraw from Afghanistan, State Department spokesman Ned Price said on Monday. The United States condemned an attack on a girls' school in the Afghan capital of Kabul on Saturday, but was still looking into who was responsible for the attack.
We're still looking into who is responsible, but I would note that ISIS has been responsible for similar attacks on Shia communities in Kabul in the past. We note the Taliban has denied involvement in the attack, and we welcome their announcement of a 3-day ceasefire over the upcoming Eid holiday. We call on the Taliban and Afghan leaders to engage seriously in the ongoing peace process to ensure the Afghan people enjoy a future free of terrorism and of senseless violence. Although the United States is withdrawing our troops, we are not disengaging from Afghanistan, and we will continue to use our diplomatic, economic, and humanitarian toolset to ensure that the gains of the past 20 years, particularly those made by women, girls, and minorities, are preserved.
That's State Department spokesman Ned Price. U.S. regulators on Monday authorized Pfizer and BioNTech's COVID-19 vaccine for use in children as young as 12, widening the country's inoculation program as vaccination rates have slowed significantly. Flora Bradley Watson of Reuters reports.
Children as young as 12 in the United States could start receiving COVID-19 vaccines as early as Thursday. That's after U.S. regulators on Monday authorized Pfizer and BioNTech's vaccine for use in people aged 12 to 15. The vaccine is already cleared in the U.S. for those 16 and older. Acting FDA Commissioner, Dr. Janet Woodcock.
Vaccinating a younger population brings us closer to returning to a sense of normalcy and to ending the pandemic. Now, parents and guardians can rest assured that in making our decision, the agency undertook a rigorous and thorough review of all available scientific data, as we have with all the COVID-19 vaccine authorizations.
U.S. President Joe Biden issued a statement hailing the authorization as, quote, a promising development in our fight against the virus. He's asked states to make the vaccine available to young people immediately. Most children with COVID-19 only develop mild symptoms or no symptoms at all. However, children are not without risk of becoming seriously ill, and they can still spread the virus. Vaccines are seen as crucial to ending the pandemic, but the pace of U.S. inoculations has slowed significantly in recent weeks. There are concerns that vaccine hesitancy in some adults will be even more pronounced when it comes to their children. Pfizer expects to have safety data on the vaccine for children ages 2 to 11 in September, when it plans to ask for that age group to be included in the emergency authorization. So far, around 46% of people in the U.S. have received at least one shot of a COVID-19 vaccine.
U.S. President Joe Biden meets with lawmakers this week to find common ground on his economic recovery plans, which includes spending on infrastructure, childcare, and education. The talks come after the United States reported a weaker than expected recovery in hiring. Michelle Quinn reports.
With the latest U.S. employment numbers showing that the economy has a long way to go to recover from the coronavirus pandemic, President Biden is consulting with lawmakers this week to press for the passage of more than $4 trillion of spending in two areas, infrastructure and families. The U.S. Department of Labor says the jobless rate rose to 6.1% in April, up slightly from 6%. U.S. employers added 266,000 jobs in April, according to labor officials, far fewer than the 1 million expected by analysts. Biden defended his administration's efforts and the large economic recovery package that passed in March without Republican support.
It was designed to help us over the course of a year, not 60 days, a year. We never thought that after the first 50 or 60 days, everything would be fine.
As for why the jobs recovery in the U.S. has been slow, there's a lot of disagreement. Some experts point to hurdles for people going back to work, such as limited access to childcare and schools not being fully open. That has hit women in particular. Some Republicans argue that expanded unemployment payments are too generous and a disincentive for people to go back to work. Senator Pat Toomey is a Republican from Pennsylvania.
Paying unemployment benefits that are more than a person makes working doesn't create an environment that's particularly conducive to going back to work.
But some progressive groups say the problem is that wages are too low for many jobs. U.S. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen said last week that she believes the U.S. will reach full employment next year and that the numbers show we're not yet finished. Biden says the weak job growth makes it more urgent for the passage of his spending plans. Both plans call for tax increases on wealthy Americans and corporations, which many Republicans oppose. Michelle Quinn, VOA News.
That's Laura Bradley Watson of Reuters. This is the Voice of America. A NASA spacecraft is headed back to Earth with rubble it collected from an asteroid nearly 200 million miles away. The robot explorer OSIRIS-REx fired its engines Monday to start a two-year trip home. The spacecraft reached ancient Cabin Ridge space rock in 2018 and spent 2 years flying near and around it to gather samples from the surface last October. Turkey's defense ministry says a rocket attack on a Turkish military supply convoy in Syria's northwestern Idlib province has killed one soldier and wounded four others. The ministry statement said Tuesday that Turkish forces retaliated to Monday's attack by firing on targets they identified in the region. It did not say who was responsible for the attack. You are listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. I am Chinedu Ofo, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. The UN Human Rights Office is calling on the Brazilian government to conduct a thorough and impartial investigation in one of the favelas in Rio de Janeiro Thursday. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
At least 25 people, including one policeman, were killed in a dawn raid in one of Rio de Janeiro's shanty towns. The dramatic operation reportedly involved police officers on the ground and in a helicopter overhead, shooting into the neighborhood, allegedly against members of a criminal organization. UN Human Rights spokesman Rupert Colville says an unknown number of people were injured, including bystanders and people inside their houses.
It appears to be the deadliest such operation in more than a decade in Rio de Janeiro, and confirms a long-standing trend of unnecessary and disproportionate use of force by police in Brazil's poor, marginalized, and predominantly Afro-Brazilian neighborhoods known as favelas.
Colville notes the operation went ahead despite a ruling by the federal Supreme Court in 2020 restricting police operations in Rio's favelas during the COVID-19 pandemic. He says clearly something is not working in Brazil's political, governmental, and judiciary systems, and they need to be fixed. He says problems in the favelas, including criminal activities, have been going on for generations.
So one can't ignore that. It's a fact of life. But the way of dealing with that, it is the responsibility of the authorities to deal with issues relating to crime without, while ensuring that the civilian population and women and children, and these are very packed and crowded places with many, many women and children, that they're not affected by these types of operations.
Colville expresses concerns about the veracity of a government-run probe into these disturbing events. He says his office has received worrying reports that police did not take steps to preserve evidence at the crime scene. He adds this could hinder investigations into this lethal operation. Responding to the raid, Brazilian Vice President Hamilton Mauro was quoted as saying that it was unfortunate that true narco guerrillas retained control over parts of Rio. Reports say President Jair Bolsonaro did not mention the incident during his weekly live broadcast last week on Facebook. Brazilian police say all those killed in the raid, other than the policemen, were suspected drug traffickers. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Sudan is facing an acute shortage of medical oxygen as a third wave of coronavirus infections swells in the economically struggling country. David Doyle of Reuters has more.
In Sudan's capital, Khartoum, oxygen cylinders are being loaded into the back of a car. They are on their way to a coronavirus patient's home for private use. But most of those seriously ill with COVID-19 are facing an acute shortage of medical oxygen. That's partly due to power cuts that impeded production at the economically struggling country's main plant. Hussein Malassi, a senior manager at the Sudanese liquid gas company, says a lack of cylinders is another problem.
Before the severity of this pandemic, the distribution of cylinders over the hospitals was sufficient. What happened is that the consumption of oxygen increased several times with the pandemic. And the cylinders at hospitals did not increase with the same level.
A government survey found that 38% of oxygen cylinders have been smuggled out of the health system for private use. Some patients bribed hospital staff, others relied on personal relationships. Everyone else has been left in hospitals unable to provide adequate care during a third wave of infections. Montasir Othman, Director of Emergency and Epidemic Control at Sudan's Ministry of Health, said times of peak infections make clear the weak capacity of Sudan's hospitals. He added that the government is working to make more cylinders available. But it's not just oxygen. The country, which has recorded 33,000 cases and 2,600 deaths since the start of the pandemic, has just 300 ventilators. Out of 37 hospitals that can take COVID-19 patients, only 11 are in the capital, which has 70% of cases. Last month, officials said Sudan could meet just 40% of its need for medicines. Social media is awash with desperate pleas for help, as relatives seek oxygen cylinders, beds, and drugs for their loved ones.
That's David Doyle of Reuters. The European Union has suspended efforts to ratify the trade deal it recently forged with Beijing as tensions rise over accusations of gross human rights abuses in China. Henry Ridgewell reports from London.
The EU-China Comprehensive Agreement on Investment took 7 years of negotiations and was finally agreed in principle in December. Europe said it was the most ambitious trade deal that China had ever signed, but it's yet to be approved by lawmakers in the European Parliament. The Vice President of the EU Commission said last week that efforts to get it ratified have now been suspended. It follows tit-for-tat sanctions imposed over China's treatment of the Uyghur population in Xinjiang province, which the United States has described as genocide. Washington imposed sanctions on several Beijing officials in March, and the European Union followed with its own measures targeting four Chinese officials. China retaliated by sanctioning five lawmakers in the European Parliament. Analysts say tensions between China and Europe over Xinjiang and the crackdown on the pro-democracy movement in Hong Kong mean ratification of the trade deal looks unlikely anytime soon. Germany's leader said the deal should not be abandoned.
Despite all the difficulties that we will certainly encounter in ratification, it is nevertheless a very important initiative that opens up greater reciprocity in access to our reciprocal markets.
The agreement was meant to open China's huge market to European companies. But from the beginning, some European lawmakers saw the deal as deeply flawed. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
Mosquito control authorities and a biotech firm are testing genetically engineered mosquitoes in the Florida Keys to combat the spread of illnesses such as dengue and yellow fever. Zachary Goldman of Reuters reports.
Florida Keys will be the site of an experiment this summer, releasing genetically modified mosquitoes into the wild. The project is aimed at reducing the spread of deadly mosquito-borne illnesses such as dengue, yellow fever, and the Zika virus. You're probably wondering how releasing more mosquitoes might lessen the problem. These Aedes aegypti mosquitoes are genetically modified organisms, or GMOs. Designed in a lab, these males carry a gene that, when they reproduce, passes into eggs. If that egg hatches into a female, the gene kills the immature mosquito. The hope is that by introducing this gene into wild populations, the population of biting females will plummet, and that's good news for the rest of us, because only female mosquitoes bite and transmit illnesses to people. The experiment in the Keys is a partnership between biotech firm Oxitech and the Florida Keys Mosquito Control District. Meredith Fensom is the head of Oxitech Global Public Affairs.
We have a small container, and this is what we put the mosquito eggs in. We close the lid, and after a week or two, our non-biting male mosquitoes begin to emerge.
Andrea Leal of the Mosquito Control District says the experiment comes just in time.
We are seeing resistance in some of our current control methods, which has made our job at mosquito control that much harder. Nothing out there is a silver bullet. We're looking to integrate whatever we can into our current control methods just to make sure that we can suppress that population below disease transmission thresholds.
The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency issued an Experimental Use Permit, or EUP, to Oxitech at the beginning of May. Some local environmentalists, such as Barry Ray, head of the Florida Keys Environmental Coalition, say the approval was haphazard and risky.
You're going to ask the people in our community to be sacrificial lambs, really, because how else are you going to produce your mosquitoes if it weren't for the people in the Keys donating their blood?
But others aren't scared by the laboratory bugs. Doug Mader is a local veterinarian.
I hear all the time that people are afraid of GMOs, and they hear that word and they get an immediate visceral reaction that it has to be bad. Well, it isn't bad. It's a way to do prevention.
Oxitech says similar projects have had over a 90% success rate in Brazil, Panama, and Malaysia.
That's Zachary Goldman of Reuters. That's it for our show today. For more in-depth and breaking news 24 hours a day, please visit voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Nadia Taha, and our managing editor, Kate Pound-Dawson, I am Chinedu Ofo in Washington. Thank you so much for listening, and have a great evening.